Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Japan's greatest victory, Britain's worst defeat, the capture of Singapore in 1942, a book written by Colonel Mansubu Suji, the mastermind behind entire operations, and we gather, rejoin them at episode 21 of me reading this through, and they have just blotted the history of the British Navy by letting 30 small boats of Japanese infantry take a capital city of one of their provinces, and no submarines, no ships, were just so smashed up by the Japanese in the first couple of days they didn't know what to do. Britain is just falling apart. It's a complete military disaster as far as I can see. But let's read on from here. New Year's Eve on the battlefield. The 5th Division, which crossed the Pirak River, used alternatively the Okabe and the Ando regiments, made a double attack on the enemy front from the jungle, and it steadily continued its advance south. But the enemy brought up their reserves from the south in rapid succession. The 5th Division was exhausted, and moreover, it was below strength. As one section was still engaged on the small boat manoeuvres, whereas the enemy forces were reinforced with fresh crack troops. The tempo of the southern advance had slowed down. The enemy, based on the strongly fortified Kampar position, resisted stubbornly and deployed for a bitterly contested battle for the last days of the old year and the beginning of the new. This is a note. Kampar was held by the 5th Indian Brigade, survivors of the 6th and 15th Brigades, with a field regiment of an anti-tank battery. The 12th Brigade had been overwhelmed by the Imperial Guards at Turok Anson on the west coast. Its retirement enabled the Japanese to threaten the flank of Kampar. The 12th Brigade was in action later in Slim River. Boarding a car that had been captured by Opoa, carrying one light machine gun with a mosquito net which I was never without, I left Opoa with two men and a driver on the afternoon of the 30th September, intending to share a glass of wine with the troops on the line to celebrate the new year on the battlefield. We drove about 50 kilometres. I was just popping up to have a drink. Suddenly we found ourselves in the midst of heavy shell fire, as intense as experienced at the Jitra line. It was coming from enemy guns in the mountains which constitute Malaya's spinal column and which lay across the main road to our destination. Even after the position of the enemy guns was located, it was very difficult to silence them owing to their concealment in the jungle. Kampar has apparently been hurriedly fortified by the day and night labour of a large fresh British army group together with a large number of coolies, but it was evidently not a solid engineering work. Owing to the contour of the ground, our attack progress slowed. The full strength of the army division and the air group cooperated for the attack on the front line. But up to the evening of the 31st of December, there was no expectation of success and some danger of failure. Leaving our cars concealed in the rubber trees, we made our way along the main road to the front line, which was roughly 300 metres from the enemy. On arrival there, we caught in a violent barrage, and it was impossible either to advance or retire. Closely scrutinising the enemy line, it appeared to me that our left wing was the important sector. The enemy presently counterattacked with bayonet charge, and hand-to-hand fighting ensued. One could say that it was impossible to distinguish between attacker and defender. By chance, a company of our medium tanks under the command of Captain Ochi came charging along the main road at this moment. That's heaps of really grainy photographs, like the worst photographs I've ever seen going on here. But it's getting us through the book. I don't think the page numbers were... No, I just think it's advanced in page numbers. Oh, just a military map. It's just enough to make you cry. Called him. Haley, or truth, that's it. That's it. Go from this side to the left. Be careful of the artillery. The meaning of this will not be clear to the reader, but the tank company commander, knowing that the staff officer speaking to him had been surveying the position of the sector, needed no further explanation and replied, "Yes, I understand." We went straight forward through the smoke of the barrage, cleared of the bursting shells. The tanks were soon, like snails, scrambling up the slope on the enemy's fortified positions, giving great encouragement to our front-line infantry. The enemy resistance, however, remained stubborn. By the evening of the 31st of December, the position was beginning to look grave. We spent the night in our car, huddled under the mosquito nets just behind the front line. We were completely fagged out and just drifting off to sleep when shell bursts lifted our car off the ground. I ordered the driver to move the car 100 metres to the rear, and we got to another position which seemed safe. We were just dozing off again when another shell landed right beside us. I said, we'd better move back a bit more. The shell power, however, seemed to follow us to the car, and no sooner did we move to a new position that we could shift to another one. The heavy shell fire indicated the possibility of the enemy counterattack either during the night or the dawn. The divisional commander had no reserves at all. Even the colour parties of the regiments were in the line. The Ando regiment, which had been made a detour to the main road into the jungle on the west, failed to connect with the division. It appeared that the enemy counterattacked us might force us back to Ipoh. At such a critical time, it was, of course, impossible for me to leave the front line. It was, I must say, the first time in my whole life I had spent the New Year's Eve on such circumstances, and I shall possibly never do it again. I hope so. In Tokyo, at the end of the first year of the war, everyone would be celebrating the New Year with noisy greetings with dishes of soba, vermicelli, while listening to New Year's Eve's bells ringing. And here we were locked in a battle spreading over the middle section of Balam, with a grave doubt. In the place of bells ringing out, quote, all is vanity and there is nothing certain in this world, unquote. We heard only the roar of gunfire informing everyone about the certainty of defeat for the week. Oh, dear. The agonizing night ended at last. The light of the sun, which began to show its face through the rubber forest, was, for some accountable reason, scarlet like blood. This seemed to me not unreasonable in the circumstances. Throughout the night, and all the morning, a continuous stream of wounded men were making their way back from the front line, either carried on stretchers or supported on the shoulders of comrades who were themselves wounded. Casualties had been heavy, but the front line there was not a man who did not greet his comrades with Happy New Year! Oh, God. Chapter 21, That Which One Sows, a quote, ... The Ando regiment, as I have said, had been given orders to detour to the main road through the jungle on the western side. Their experiences and hardship almost baffled description. Immersed to the chest while cutting their way through swampy jungle, they were only able to advance about 2,000 metres a day. Above the level of the swamp, there were a network of thorny vines and cane through which they had to cut every inch of the way. The men were covered with leeches and everywhere were venomous snakes, without fear of man raising their heads ready to strike. During the day, it was an inferno of heat through which no breezes blew. At night, the men were chilled to the bone. The jungle was a gruesome place at night. The men were exhausted by the ordeal of the day's march, and there was no life in the voices which encouraged one another. No rice could be cooked, so they had to chew dry, uncooked rice. Conditions continued for 3 days and 3 nights, but the early dawn of the 2nd of January, the Ando regiment was at the rear of the enemy in a position to attack their gun positions with hand grenades. Oh my God, they did that in the Kokoda Trail. That is awful. I hate that type of stuff. The attack on the rear of the enemy's positions by the Ando regiment caused sudden change in the situation in the whole battlefront. While the enemy attempted to deal with the threat of the rear, the Okebi regiment made a successful frontal attack and the enemy was soon in full retreat. Singing triumphal songs, the soldiers of the Ando regiment raised, oh Godfather, the Japanese flag on the Kampar fortress and picked off the leeches which covered their bodies. Mr. Churchill said in his memoir, the Japanese army had become expert in jungle warfare. From the enemy Prime Minister, this is a high praise, but his comment is surprising. The 5th and 18th Division had abundant experience on the Chinese front, but they had never known the meaning of the word jungle. The soldiers first saw jungle only when they landed in Malam. The study of the jungle warfare had been set down as part of the duties of an investigation department in Taiwan, but very little work could be done on the subject as there was no suitable jungle here. Afterwards, the advance of the Imperial Guards Division to the southern part of Indochina provided some experience, but the Indochina there was no malignant swampy jungle as there were in Malaya. It was not a jungle experience or training jungle warfare, but the indomitable fighting spirit of the officers and men which enabled them to surmount difficulties and hardship to make detours through the jungle to attack the enemy rear. Oh, this is so... There was a... The Australians got whipped by the Japanese when they went through the jungle and got our flank. It was the famous... it was getting desperate times, and we actually sent up two militia regiments. That is, people jumped on the back of trucks in Melbourne and Sydney. And Sydney regiment, which is the Western Sydney regiment, was up against the Japanese, and we were up around the back. They came around the back of us. In the war, there's greater suffering than that of combat, the agony of one's heart, as it means to ensure the enforcement of military discipline and the maintenance of public morale by the army commander at the beginning of hostilities in Malaya. I was one of those who stubbornly advocated the men guilty of plunder, rape, and incendiarism without any distinction whatever regarding rank should be executed before a firing squad. Well, I wish they did. They, did, of course, never did it. But sheltering under the existing laws and regulations, there were others who would not consent to this. And the final result, they got their way. The penalty for the offences in question were only to be heavy punishment. Oh, well, there you go. During the Manchurian incident, there you go. They always use the word incident when it's their fault. It's a matter of regret that there was not quite a number of... There was quite a number of breaches of military discipline perpetrated on the civilians by the Japanese army fighting China and Manchuria. Yet to the bitter end, there was nobody who advocated execution by shooting for these crimes. And even to this day, I feel a strong dissatisfaction that such an attitude should have existed positively. Such things should be not be repeated in a war that is just beginning. After the Kobashi Battalion had seized Penang, there were many more misdemeanors that were disclosed. According to reports of the inhabitants, three soldiers, on conclusion, pillaged and raped the... And there was not the slightest shadow of doubt in the matter. At once, the military police made rigorous investigation and arrested the criminals, who were tried by court-martial. The army commander held the battalion regiment commanders responsible as well and punished them by 30 days close arrest. Close arrest meant suspension from duty, confinement quarters, and loss of half pay during the period of punishment. Oh, dear. I was ordered to convey personally the army commander's order to the divisional regimental commanders. And the incident aroused painful recollections of the time when, as a cadet company leader, I was condemned to 30 days close arrest by the Inspector General M. Blank of the Military Department of Training. At that time, I had nipped in the bud the activities of a student at the Army Academy who had been implicated in the November affair. Okay, the November affair. Rebellion of young officers against the Tokyo government. Oh, go. That's preventing him from becoming involved in the scandal. To maintain discipline, this is amazing that they're actually not fighting the Japanese people or the Japanese state. They're fighting the Japanese army. The Japanese army is a complete separate body. To maintain discipline in an army, it is necessary to impose heavy penalties for those offences. In the middle of desperate battle, however, I felt it was rather awkward to have to inform the battalion regimental commander that they were under the closest arrest for 30 days. I wished to postpone the punishment until after the battle, for if they were placed under arrest while the battle in progress, the officers concerned would undoubtedly be depressed and their conduct of operations would be adversely affected. I have never had such a painful duty performed. Of course, the Army Chief of Staff, or the staff officer, assistant commander, according to the status of the officer in charge of the operations, must issue the order. Relentless death by shooting, which was strongly advocated by men in question, the feeling of the army commandant who had to order the punishment were well known. Quote, that which one sows, one must reap. Because of the heavy losses and the bitter Kuala Lumpur Kampar battle, the enemy, who had rallied for a second day, began to retreat all along the line after the flank attack of the Anto Regiment, which followed their jungle detour. This regiment now became the front line in pursuit of the enemy. The Nakabi Regiment, which had lost heavily, was ordered to reorganize our support line. This is the only opportunity I had to speak to the regiment commander, taking care that the purpose of my visit should not be known to the others. I called on the fatigued veteran and said to him, quote, I'm sorry to trouble you, and I had to tell you, Mr. Regimental Commander, that His Excellency the Army Commander holds you responsible for the incident of plunder and rape by soldiers of the Kushi Battalion, and has condemned you to close arrest for 30 days. End quote. It was extremely painful duty for me to convey the order to a tired regimental commander who had lost so many subordinates in hard fighting, but at the last rout of the enemy. I was glad I was speaking to him in the dark so we could not see each other's faces at the time. He replied in a grave voice, quote, I heard of the misconduct of my subordinates and must accept it as due to my unworthiness as a commander. There is no excuse. I respectfully accept my punishment. Please convey my apologies to His Excellency General Meshitam. The misconduct of subordinates had been caused by of considerable worry to commander. Our objective... Oh, God, you should... They were just beheading everyone, the Japs. Okay, our objective in the war was to emancipate the Far East, and an era of misconduct or even one or two persons could rise to an evil influence. It was necessary, therefore, that the commanders should be punished if they failed to prevent the misconduct of subordinates, for, as the saying goes, quote, a little leak can sink a great ship. Deep in my heart, I sympathised with the regimental commander, for he was a pathetic figure, and I believed him should commit harikiri to atone for his... I believe he should commit harikiri to atone for his offences. This is suicide. To comfort him, I told him excellent contact during battle would be minutely reported to the army commander. I also called the regimental adjutant outside and said, quote, be careful of the regimental commander. Under no circumstances must you agree with him. What? I gave this caution in case the regimental commander discussed the adjutant his intention to commit harikiri. Harikiri. So this is where they get their ceremonial sword and commit suicide. You know, this is just amazing stuff. And I'll put this through, and I just really hope by just pushing myself day in, day out, 24 hours a day, rehabilitation, that my speaking improves. I've been able to switch off the voice, activated recording, because there's no longer the pauses there, so this will live to a higher quality recording, and I'm slowly tracking down and cutting down the gaps in the software. So there's things which just don't work first time. I'm still chasing it down, but one of the problems is that as I run repeated trials, I'll fill up areas of the computer. And so it's unclear whether some software, some external software, which I've sort of using as client software, can't handle sort of the large files that it has to look through. So that'll be under control. And the next one is a thrust through the jungle. But that the Japanese tactic of just going through what is considered impossible jungle is... what happened up to the Western Sydney Regiment, the Penrith Regiment. So the Penrith Regiment from around where we were, they were not professional soldiers, they were just people off the street. So the Japanese are coming, all our armies. One army was locked up in, lost in Singapore, another army was held, the other Australian army was held up at Sri Lanka. Churchill blocked them at Sri Lanka. And so the only troops we had left in Australia really to fight the Japanese were these reserve regiments, you know, of military citizens regiment, irregular militia, and just people that had no military experience whatsoever, went up against the Japanese, and they did exactly the same thing. We were in against a... up on the Kokoda Trail, and they went through... the bush. It's a much smaller scale than this, but this is pretty scary stuff. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.